So I'm here today to talk about new developments in Cherry training systems. About 15 years ago, I started trying to break down this complex canopy architecture into simplified fruiting units and envision how, with the advent of dwarfing rootstocks, we could re-envision new canopy architectures for sweet cherries that would give us optimal fruit quality, more precise management of crop loads, and improve our labor efficiencies. So first of all, I think you need to understand what the basic fundamental fruiting unit is of a cherry. I'll run through these things kind of quickly to try to get all the slides in. If we jump down here to year three, you can see how the tree has grown. It takes 3 years to develop a fully functioning, full fruiting unit in cherry, where you've got large leaves with the new shoot growth. Each of those nodes then from the previous year become non-fruiting spur leaves. And in this season, there will be flower buds forming, but of course there's no fruit there this season. There is a small portion of fruit that forms at the base of that previous season's growth. These are non-spur fruit, so there's no vegetative growing point there. And that means they'll fruit, and then they'll become blind nodes. And then on the wood that is 3 years old, you have fruit and spur leaves. And you have a higher proportion of spurs out here towards the terminal of that segment of growth. You also have more flower buds per spur. So the density of the crop load is not uniform, it's asymmetric. So as we understand this fundamental fruiting unit, it helps us gain precision as we move to new, higher density, structured canopy architectures. In 2010, talking with folks like Todd and Matt Whiting and Terrence Robinson, we started to envision how to put together an NC140 regional research project that typically focuses on rootstocks, but we said now that we've got the rootstocks identified that have brought precocity and different levels of vigor control into cherry production, let's envision how they could be used in different architectures of modern cherry orchards. So these are the four architectures that we decided upon. A multiple leader bush type system that we call the Kim Green bush, after the grower in Australia, Kim Green, who worked it out over a number of years. What we call the tall spindle X, somewhat like a tall spindle apple tree. It's basically an evolution of numerous previous central leader cherry architectures that had preceded it. Super slender axe, which was developed in Italy by Stefano Musacchi. Very high density central leader system. And then the upright fruiting offshoots, which is a system that I started back when I was at Washington State. Matt Whiting was my student. When I left, he took it over and came up with the classy name UFO. And it's where we are growing the tree somewhat horizontally as a cordon, and then growing uprights in a very similar way to the KGB, but in a planar system. So of these architectures, these two are three-dimensional, so to speak, and these two are much more two-dimensional or planar, creating much more of a fruiting wall. We put these four systems on three different rootstocks of different vigor levels: Gisela 3, dwarfing; Gisela 5, semi-dwarfing; and Gisela 6, semi-vigorous. So we could look at the interaction of the different canopies and the vigor imparted by the rootstocks. For the sake of the trial, we planted these at 1.5 by 3.5 meters, except for that very high density SSA system, which was at twice the tree density. And you'll see as I move forward that we were able to take this uniform spacing, look at the performance of the trees after 3 years, and then develop recommendations for what appropriate spacings might be for growers in different sites. So here is the KGB, and this is how we would envision those fruiting units formed on the KGB. Some of the underlying principles of all four systems are that we want to minimize the permanent wood. And so the solid line in these diagrams indicates the only true permanent wood that is maintained through the life of the orchard. All the dotted lines would be the branches or the fruiting units that are renewed on some basis. Typically, for three of the four systems, we're trying to renew about 15 or 20% of the tree per year, the exception being the SSA system, in which basically 100% of the tree fruiting units is renewed each year. The other thing to notice is in this system, the production is largely on spurs right along these uprights. We eliminate lateral branches, so we eliminate most of those basal fruit that occur in the base of last year's shoots. This is the TSA system and how we envision the fruiting units on the TSA, the permanent wood being the central leader, the temporary fruiting units being the dotted lines again. And this system fruits on a mixed population of both the fruiting spurs and the basal fruiting shoots, generally about a 40 to 60% or 55 to 45% mix in that fruit population. Here with the SSA, we see a radically different type of fruiting. The fruit is primarily at the base of new shoots, and each of those new shoots is renewed every year. So 100% of the fruiting units get renewed every year, and we have a very narrow population, primarily of the base flowers and just a few spurs along the trunk. And finally, the UFO system, similar again to the KGB, lots of uprights. Most of the fruit is borne on the spur population, and about 15 to 20% of the tree is renewed every year. So we have a lot of details on how to form these trees, and I want to throw in a plug here. If you go to our website, you'll see a new publication that you can download as a PDF, which was written by Lynn Long, Stefano Misaki, Matt Whiting, and myself. We just came out with it this spring, a 63-page guide on how to prune and train each of these systems plus three others. We've even turned it into an app for iPads and for Android tablet computers, which is very convenient. So you see it's a nice mix of pictures and diagrams running through season by season from establishment on through maintenance of the trees. So it saves me a lot of time in explaining people how to do these things now. I can just refer them to those resources. These plots then were planted at 13 different locations around the country. We're down to about five that are actually giving us good data at this point. It's very difficult to grow cherries. And there's a lot of things we've encountered with bacterial canker in Oregon and our malaria in California that have eliminated a lot of our work. So the work that I'm going to present is that from Michigan, which is where we use the cultivar Benton, a self-fertile variety. This just shows you the relative vigor across the different systems. We've got KGB, TSA, SSA, and UFO. The rootstocks are always listed. Gisela 3, most dwarfing. Gisela 5, dwarfing. And Gisela 6, semi-vigorous. And you can see the rootstocks performing just exactly as we would expect it across all of these different systems. The most vigorous system is the KGB. All the trees are a bit more vigorous in the KGB compared to the other systems based on trunk cross-sectional area. The really outlier here is the SSA, where the trees are planted so close together that Gisela 6 actually has the same vigor as Gisela 3 in the other systems. We suspect that's due to the root competition of being planted so closely. So the next slide shows you the precocity that we've seen. And this is looking at the flower bud number in year 2. And what I'd like to just point out is Gisela 3, down here, the white bars, are clearly the most precocious of the three rootstocks. When it comes to systems, the SSA is the most precocious of the systems. We don't have SSA with Gisela 5, unfortunately. And the KGB is the least precocious because there are a lot of pruning that's done in the early years to develop those multiple leaders, and that pruning is absolutely counter to flower bud formation. So that gives you a sense of the precocity. And the focus of the trial and the focus of our philosophy for high-density cherries is to invest in tree architecture and structure in the first 2 to 3 years. But by the end of the third year, you should have filled your orchard footprint and then moved into shifting resources into fruit production. So for that reason, we looked at the year 3 growth data. We looked at what allocation we had provided in the orchard for that tree and how much of that allocation of area it had filled. So here with UFO on Gisela 3, we'd filled 63% of the allotted area, 92% with Gisela 5, and 108% with Gisela 6. So here's where we took those uniform tree spacings and then used them to calculate what a recommended tree spacing ought to be on this soil type and this climate for these combinations. You can see here that what we would have come up with is a tree spacing of 1 meter on Gisela 3, 1.4 meters on Gisela 5, and 1.6 meters on Gisela 6. So we took that kind of data, then we also put in some fudge factors from what we were observing happening over the next year or two and how fast those trees are filling and shading each other out. And we came up with this recommended tree spacing across those different combinations. So we have 11 combinations total of canopy system by rootstock, ranging from 1,250 trees to 4,762 trees. Clearly the SSA being very high density, the KGB being the least dense. So we took these numbers, and this is how we then calculated our yields in subsequent years. So I'll look here at the yields in year 4, year 5, and year 6. In year 4, the yields ranged from 0.1 to 9.8 tons per hectare. Our yields were strongly impacted by the fact that in 2012, the previous year, we bloomed 5 weeks early. We had about 12 frost events following that bloom, and massive bacterial canker came in and killed 80 to 120 spurs per tree. So we not only lost the crop in 2012, we lost fruiting capacity in 2013 and in 2014. So here were our yields in year 4. The stars for yield were the TSA on Gisela 3 and the SSA on Gisela 3, followed by the UFO on Gisela 3. So Gisela 3 being the most dwarfing also has been the most productive and the most precocious. We go to year 5. Here we're still suffering some lingering mortality of those spurs. We also had a severe winter in 2014 that killed some flower buds on the tree. But our yields were up at least a bit more than year 4, but nowhere near what we think is our potential. And again, the TSA on Gisela 3 was the best, followed more closely by the UFO on Gisela 3 and Gisela 5. And interestingly, the yield started to decline on the SSA trees. So I had Stefano out this past year, and we talked about this, and he gave me some good tips and advice on pruning the trees. We may see some advantages or some improvements in the future as I take his into account. In year 6, the yields were down. We not only had a severe winter, we had poor pollination, and we had raccoons breaching the electrical fence, which sort of disproportionately affected the yields on the TSA, because TSA trees are preferred by 9 out of 10 raccoons for climbing compared to UFO or SSA trees. But when we look at fruit quality here, you can see very nice large fruit, 11 to 12 grams fruit sizes. And when we look at yields, the UFO on Gisela 3 was now the best, followed by the SSA, then the UFO on Gisela 5, and the TSA on Gisela 3. When we look at overall cumulative yields over those years, the TSA had the highest yields, followed by the UFO and the SSA on Gisela 3. So we've looked the last two slides here at some of the labor efficiencies that these different training systems bring to us. This year we measured picking time, and we look at the rootstock effects on picking time. You can see certainly the smallest trees are the easiest to pick, less ladder work. Gisela 6 took 22% longer to pick trees across the various training systems. When we look at the training systems, we see that the system that really stands out is the TSA, the more traditional system but with the most complex canopy. It took 39% more time to pick compared to the others. And the easiest system to pick was the UFO. You could actually pick the entire tree from one side of the row, which is handy because you've got trellis wires in this system. But it's such a narrow system that you could pick the fruit on the front and the back. We've also looked at pruning times. I'll just hit the highlights here. If we look at dormant pruning in the blue bars, the most complex system is the TSA. It takes the longest amount of time. We looked at summer pruning largely through hedging when possible. So we were able to hedge these three systems, but we could not hedge that KGB system. So it was most complex. And when we look at the total tree time, then KGB took the most time, followed by the TSA, then the UFO, and least was the SSA. But of course, these are twice as dense. So when we actually put in tree densities, we find that the cheapest system to prune, if we can hedge it, is the TSA, followed by the KGB, 17% more, the UFO, the KGB, 27% more, and the SSA takes a lot more time because there are so many trees and you're making a pruning cut on every single fruiting unit. So to conclude, the SSA and the GI3 trees are the most precocious. KGB is the least precocious. The highest early yields are on the SSAs, but flower bud formation and yields, at least with Benton, have started to decline as the canopy has matured. As those dead spurs became replaced, we found that the other systems, the TSA and the UFO in particular, increased and became the best in yield. The UFO has higher establishment costs than the TSA, but lower picking costs, and relatively comparable annual pruning costs if we can hedge the TSA as easily as the UFO. All the architectures on Gizela 6 have been excessively vigorous at these densities, resulting in lower productivity, and all of them have the lowest orchard efficiencies. The KGB on all the Gizela stocks requires some sort of support. It's a system that's built on upright shoots, and Gizela rootstocks tend to have kind of floppy shoot growth, something we didn't anticipate before the trial began. So the continuing question, since this is a 10-year program, is what are the mature yield potentials? Can we get through a year with no winter damage or raccoons or bacterial canker, et cetera? What is going to be the success of the fruiting unit renewal strategies? We're already seeing that on the dwarfing rootstocks, with heavy crop loads, we get less regrowth and less success in renewing those fruiting units. Will we get adequate long-term vigor on Gizela 3? What are the optimal annual growth targets for balancing leaf and fruit bud formation? That is, we know if we get a lot of growth, like in a Gizela 6, we have fewer fruit buds. If we get very little growth, we have an excessive number of fruit buds. So what's that optimal balance? That's what we're targeting to figure out in the next 4 years. And finally, refining our strategies of dormant versus summer pruning and detail pruning versus mechanized hedging are going to be, I think, key components to full adoption of these training systems in the future. With that, I'm glad to answer any questions if we have time, Todd.
Thanks for having me. Well, we're 5 minutes over. I'll take a question, and then if people are sticking around, perhaps we can have more questions since there's nothing afterwards. Go ahead.
Quick one. Did you, last year, as you know, you had this early cold in the northwest, Did you see any difference in terms of the structural value?
That's a good question. The question is structural damage from early cold. And in our trial, we also had some early cold. It wasn't as severe as yours, but where we did the summer hedging, we looked at actually two different timings of summer hedging, and right after harvest in early July and then a month later in early August. That early July summer hedging created regrowth, and that regrowth was damaged from the cold. The later summer hedging, we saw no effect of damage on the tree canopy, and we saw no effect on flower bud formation either.
Okay. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.